Jason. Today we're going to do something that I must admit is not part of a traditional way to concentrate on the family in Sefer Bereishis. Because when most people learn about the family, we discuss, you know, Avraham and his children, Yitzchak and his children, Yaakov and his children, maybe even Yosef and his children. I want to do something a little different. Of course, we will be discussing all of those over the year. I want to discuss Terach and his children. Terach. Now, Terach is mentioned in the end of Sefer Yehoshua. You may recognize what I'm about to read more from a different source than Yehoshua. Right. At the very end of Sefer Yehoshua, as we're about to enter the land of Israel, today is November 6th, and we're doing parents and children in Tanakh. Okay, so Yehoshua is exhorting them to follow Torah, and they're really this time about to enter the land, right? Or I shouldn't say about to, they've entered the land already, they've entered it, they just conquered it, they're about to inhabit the land. So he sets them up and he says, V'yemei Yehoshua kol ha'am, kol amar Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, chapter 24, verse 2. Chapter 24, verse 2.
576.
Be'ever ha'nahar yoshvu avoseichem me'olam. Your ancestors lived, as soon as you know where this is from, please raise your hand. Your ancestors lived... This is in Mahagadah. Terach Avi Avraham va'Avi Nachor. Terach, the father of Avraham and the father of Nachor. And you should know, Vayavdu Elohim Acherim. It's actually these three words for why we say this in Mahagadah. Because this chapter is meant to fulfill in a command that the Mishnah tells us we should make sure to fulfill at the Seder, which is Matchilin B'Gnai U'Masayimin B'Shvach. I'm paraphrased. It's Matzilin Begnus. We should start the evening speaking about some of the disparaging, shameful details of our past in order to appreciate how far we've come, Misayim and B'Shevach. And we will conclude the night with all kinds of song and dance and Hallel and praise, etc. So look at our ignominious past. We were idolaters. We have Du Elohim Acherim. And I took your fathers, I took Avraham from across the river, and I told him to walk to and fro in the land of Israel, as we saw, not yes, in this past week's parasha, but the parasha before that. And I increased his seed, and I gave him Yitzchak. I gave him Yitzchak. What do you mean? God gives every child to his parents. But Yitzchak really was not expected. He was born of such old parents. So he says, I gave him Yitzchak. Ve'etein li Yitzchak es Yaakov. Here, I even gave Yitzchak Yaakov. Ve'es Esav. Ve'etein li Esav es har Seir, l'reshes oso. And I gave Esav Mount Seir as an inheritance. Yaakov avanav yodu Mitzrayim. And Yaakov and his descendants went down to Egypt. And that's the end of what's in the Haggadah. Okay, and that's all we need to learn here. I just have a technical question. It's a question you could ask on the Haggadah, but it's a question, of course, first on Yehoshua. If he's mentioning Yaakov and Esav, why not mention Yishmael? And if he didn't mention Yishmael, why are you mentioning Esav? And why mention Nachor? Why should I care that he doesn't mention Haran?
Right.
Why are you just mentioning Nachor? He says Terach was the father of Nachor and Avraham. He was also the father of Lot. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm sorry, of Haran, who was the father of Lot. So I'd like to turn back, all the way back to Bereishis, right at the end of Parshas Noah. Mm-hmm. Before Lot. We are on page 24. Right? Mm-hmm. Just on the last word of page 22 is where I'm going to start. Okay, everyone have it? First, let me answer the question I just raised. Can anyone understand why, when Yahushua is speaking about our entrance into the land of Israel, that we must mention Yaakov and Esav, but not Yitzchak and Yishmael?
Yishmael was your inherit.
Right, Yishmael was blocked from this story in Avraham's lifetime. Mm-hmm. It says Avraham sent Yishmael away and gave everything to Yitzchak. Yishmael understood that. He's a great nation because he's Avraham's son, but he never questioned that gift to Yitzchak. It was given by Avraham willingly, knowingly, and Yishmael has no say in it. However, Esav did not feel that he got the fair deal. He felt that my brother took what's mine through
subterfuge.
Right? Now, I'll tell you that there is some Ashkenazic commentaries who are very, very intent of exonerating Yaakov of any wrongdoing in Parshas Toldos. And they say that it's actually Esav who is acting immorally by accepting the blessing. He should have told his father when he said, go out and hunt me some venison and I'll give you my blessing before I die.
I sold it.
He should have said, it's not mine, Daddy. I sold it. Right? Boshur says that. He should have confessed right there. Yaakov wasn't stealing something that wasn't his. He was obeying his mother's directive in order to get back what was mine. Right? Okay. So, but
from
anyway...
From a literary point of view, there are two impediments to the to Yaakov's inheritance of the Greek. And one of them he pays for by working, by being tricked. He's tricked Yitzchak, and Lavan tricks him.
But especially involving an older and a younger sibling.
And the older and the younger, exactly. Right. When he complains, he says it's not the custom here.
In our
the younger
in Komainer.
The older. And that relieves the impediment by poetic justice against Yitzchak. And the second impediment is with Esav. And here, of course, he becomes no longer Yaakov, Lamei Kaftani, Zupa Mayim. He becomes Israel. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the next day, he can meet Esav in Machanaim and make peace with him.
Right.
So both impediments are paid for.
Yes. So that's an interesting that you say it that way, because that's the Lashon Chazal use, that Yaakov paid the debt of the patriarchy. The debt included being strangers in a strange land. Right. That's why immediately the first thing Moshe tells Paro, isn't it? It's like funny. The first thing Moshe tells Paro upon beginning the workings of Yetzias Mitzrayim is "Bini Bechori Yisrael." So Rashi says the drash: "My true Bechor is Yisrael," because now, with the advent of Yetzias, can you tell me? What is that? Ask him to go outside the door. With the advent of Yetzias Mitzrayim, now Yaakov paid the debt. Right? That's the Lashon Chazal used. Yaakov paid the debt of the servitude in Egypt. Yaakov paid the debt of Yetzias Mitzrayim that Esav never paid. Esav's descendants didn't spend time in Egypt. They went to Har Seir, as the Pasuk says. Right? And interesting, you mentioned a literary point. There's very an interesting contrast between Yitzchak and Yishmael on one side and Yaakov and Esav on the other side in a comparable Pasuk, where I can compare the two pairs, and one is in this week's parashah. Anyone want to venture what I'm talking about?
Wait, repeat the question.
There is a very fascinating comparison between these two sets of brothers and two very comparable psukim, almost exact psukim, one of which is in this week's parashah. And the contrast will reveal something about the reason why Yahushua has to mention Esav but not Yishmael. Yes, what do you think?
Yishmael is harassing.
It's a heck.
Yeah.
It's a heck, Esau. It's a heck, Yishmael.
Okay, but Chazal are very good at finding bad things about Esau also.
And after that, Sarah says, after he does that, Sarah says,
I don't want him in my...
This son of this Egyptian will not inherit.
Right, but what I want is
that... And this, too, is poetic justice in the sense that Yitzchak is laughed at three times. And the last one, of course, is when Jacob fools him. The second time is near Cadah, but the first time is by Esau. And in that sense, Esau...
That was the one we just did. I assume he's referring... You're referring to Vayera, right?
And the first time...
And
the first time is by Ishmael. And that sense, Ishmael loses his right.
Okay.
I thought
well, this is, of course ironic, because his name is Yitzchak, just the same. But what I'm looking for is such a clear... It's almost the same exact pasuk. Now, it's true that Esav is Ishmael's father-in-law, so there's a connection there, of course. But, Jen, do you have a thought about this?
I was thinking that Ishmael comes with Yitzchak to bury their father,
That's what I'm looking for, yes.
What's that?
In this week's parsha, when Yitzchak and Ishmael bury Avraham, it says it like that. And Yitzchak and Ishmael buried their father, Avraham. In Parshas Vayishlach, when Yitzchak is buried, it says Esav and Yaakov went to bury their father, Yitzchak. You get it?
Uh-huh.
In the text allows Yitzchak to be mentioned before his much older brother Ishmael, but it doesn't allow Yaakov to be mentioned before. In fact, this is an interesting point. This is just that you can just open up a concordance and see. Whenever Yaakov and Esav are mentioned together in the same pasuk, and they are in a few places, Divrayamim, in Malachi, whenever they're mentioned together in the pasuk, Esav always comes first, except once. There's only one time when Esav doesn't come first in the whole Tanakh.
Huh.
It's very interesting. The only one time where Esav doesn't come first, Rashi on the pasuk says, "I don't know why it says this." You know what I'm talking about?
Maybe in Devarim, like
that. No. The very end of Parshat Toldot, when Yaakov is sent away from home, it says, right, it says he was sent to Lavan, the sister of Rivka, who was the mother of Yaakov and Esav. And he actually writes, I know that. What does he have to tell me? What does he have to tell me? The mother of Yaakov and Esav. Right, but that's that. There it says the mother of Yaakov and Esav. So the reason for this might be obvious. You get it? That it was only Rivka. You know, anything else in the world, of course, Esav is the older boy. He's getting the birthright. But it's because of Rivka that Yaakov was placed ahead. Now Yaakov, this is Rashbam and Ramban say this. Yaakov historically ruined everything Rivka did for him. In Parshas Vayishlach, Kachna es birchosi asher huvaslach. For goodness sakes, the whole text is calling this gift he's preparing him a mincha. Throughout the whole story, about six times, it's called mincha. He should have said kachna es minchosi. Instead, he says kachna es birchosi asher huvaslach. Rashi hits it right in the nail. He says, Yaakov is trying to convince his brother that just in case you saw the pasuk of what Daddy said to me, I didn't get any of that. I didn't get Tal HaShemayim, I didn't get Shemane Eretz, I didn't get Rosh Tov HaGadol V'Yisi Rosh, I didn't get Yabdu Chamim. And by the way, who's bowing to whom, right? Daddy said, Yishtachavu L'cha B'nei Mecha. So Yaakov gives all that back. Okay, but anyway, it's only Rivka who's given the Rashi, by saying, I don't know why this is so, Rashi doesn't comment on every single verse in the Bible. He just says, I think it's significant that Rivka is mentioned this way. I'm just not sure of the significance, right? I haven't found anything that satisfies me.
Because we had the blessed prophecy with Yaakov.
I think what it means to say, even though Yaakov is placed first, is that, although it says earlier in the parasha, and this goes a long way to figure out what the word love actually means in the Bible, right? The Torah uses the word love in this week's parasha, and then again in next week's parasha. It says Yitzchak loved Rivka after he married her, and it says that Rivka loved Yaakov, and Yitzchak loved Esav. I know I'm jumping the gun. This is not our topic for today, but the targum for these words is Rachem. term for love in the Bible is resh chet mem in Aramaic. Just more of an empathy. We love one another because we empathize. We're all in the same boat together. We're all ending up in the same place. We're all going to get defeated by the worm. Maybe not the same worm, but some worm. So that should humble us, no? So, and that's why it says in the Torah, "Bahavtem es hager ki gerim heyisem be'eretz Mitzrayim." Love the ger because that's how you started off, after all, right? Some of us say that's why we started that way, so we would have that sensitivity for the most commonly repeated mitzvah in the entire Torah. Right? Did you hear that? That's a Gemara Mitzia. No mitzvah is mentioned as often in the Torah as the fair treatment of the ger. So good. I gave you this whole long overview. What does this have to do with why am I taking time out for Terach and Nachor? So I would say the amazing thing, something about the name Nachor that is unique in the entire Torah. I don't even mean about the nature of the name. If you start reading with me, we're on page 24, where it says, "Vayechi Nachor teisha ve'esrim shana." Nachor was 29 years old. Vayoled es Terach. Torah, because it's at the Sof Pasuk, right? You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Nachor was 29, and he gave birth to a son named Terach. Vayechi Nachor, acharei holido es Terach, tsha esrei shana, umaaz shana, vayolid banim uvanim. After he gave birth to Terach, he lived another 129 years, and he had sons and daughters. Vayechi Terach, shivim shana, vayolid es Avram, es Nachor, es Haran, es... Did you pick it up?
Yeah, I think it was named for the grandfather.
There's no other person in the Torah like this. Where a man has a son who has his father's name. Isn't that amazing?
So that's something positive about Terach?
It's something, it shows, we name like that today.
Yes, Junior.
Right? We find it in the amongst the Tanoim. You have Gamliel, Shimon, Gamliel, Yehuda, Gamliel. Right? There are four Gamliels in the middle of there. There are three Shimons in the middle of there.
But what, he's named after his grandfather.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Terach has a son with the same name as his father.
Yes.
So that's very common. So what's very interesting is if we could try to figure out, was the second Terach named in the life of the first one? And the answer is an unequivocal yes. Of course he was. Terach the elder still had a good 70, 80 years of life by the time... Right? It says, well, here's the point, though. It says Terach was 70 when he had these three boys.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it means the first one was when he was 70. Now, could it mean the second one was born when he was 120? I'm just trying to discuss the Sephardic and Ashkenazic situation
right.
here about naming in the lifetime. Because when Yaakov says, Hamalach ha-goelo simi kol ra, yivarech ha-sin arim, let him bless these two boys, Menachem, Ephraim, and Menashe. Right? V'korei bahem shmi v'shem avosai Avraham v'Yitzchak. That these boys and all others should name their children after me and after my father Yitzchak and my grandfather Avraham. Right? That's a simple pshat of what he's saying. In other words, keep the names in the family. That's continuity. Right? Let me tell you about the grandfather you're named after that you never met. Right? So what's interesting is that there's not one person in the whole Tanakh named Avram, Yitzchak, or Yaakov.
No,
I'm just saying that Yaakov on his deathbed tells his son, name the children of a Karebahem Shmi, Vashem, Avosai, Avraham, Yitzchak, but no one does. There's a woman named Yaakova in Divrei Yamim, but there's nothing close to Avram, Yitzchak, or Yaakov. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Names are just fascinating. The Talmud and Midrashim have scores of Yitzchaks and Yaakovs, but there's not one Avraham. Seems that there were names that were avoided. There were just one or two Moshes. There were names that were just avoided. Right? I'm just saying. There's no David. There's no Rabbeinu David in the Talmud. It was shown that we have some in the Talmud. I'm saying.
Why not?
I don't know. The names that. I'm not. I'm
not H.L. Ginsberg believed David wasn't a name. It was.
Dote.
The word from Gdud, which meant captain. Oh, the Gdud. David Gdud. was a title, not a name.
We recently found an archaeological find named To David.
Yeah.
With a yud in it. Right? And Divrei Yamim and Treyaser always spells it with a yud. You wouldn't have that with a good dude.
Okay.
All right, but
I'm just translated it already.
Okay, I mean, all right. Okay, so here's where I'm starting. Here, that when Avraham was told to leave this place, and then it's time for him to worry about his own continuity, right? I mean, I had one son. It was ill-conceived. It wasn't, because I didn't pray for Sarah. We did that last week, remember? Mm-hmm. And I sent him away, right? Then I had another son. That son was almost taken away from me. Right? Remember, at the end of the Akedah, there's a small little maftir in last week's parasha. Remember what's in that maftir?
Mm-hmm.
Right after the Akedah. Yeah, it mentions all of his brothers, children, and Malchan and Rivka, and all these people. He goes, what's going on here, God? I'm the father of a great nation. I hear about my brother. My brother's, he gets a family picture, and there's like 40 people in the picture. And I have two sons, and Avram was still yet to marry again, and you'll see he has a lot more children, but still, you know, it's really a Shveretz HaZayin, a chosen one, right? So here, so the first thing is that even though Avram was told to leave from this place, when it comes time to think of his own continuity and get a wife and some family for my son, right, he goes back to that place. Right. There's lots written on this topic, but he knows he can go back to that place because even though they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they're still, right? As we learn later on in Bereishis, they're still Ovdei Avodah Zarah there. Nonetheless, they have some. They have a certain sense of appreciation for family that I can return to. But let's see what happens on their way. To they leave. It says Vayichi Terach Shivim Shana Ve'olodes Avram Es Nachor Es Haran. Ve'elo told us Terach Holidus Avram Es Nachor Es Haran. VeHaran Holidus Lot. Okay, it only mentions Haran's child. Avram doesn't have a child. As far as Nachor, we're going to learn about Nachor's children later. All right. Vayomos Haran Al Pnei Terach Aviv. Haran died in his father's lifetime. Be'eretz Moladeto Be'ur Kasdim. Why does he have to tell me that? So, Chazal make a quite a significant drash out of this, which Rashi mentions, that Haran and Avraham were the first two to challenge, really, it was Avraham. Haran wanted to see, which way it's going, but the first to challenge the Migdal Bavel story that just... Yes. Okay, invite him in. All right, So that, remember the Migdal Bavel story is Vayikol Aretz Safar Echas Udvim Achadim. It's a beautiful story of cooperation, unity, everybody is one. It looks like a kapara for the competition of Kain and Hevel, right? Life is a struggle between competition and cooperation. That's all of life, right? Okay? So there the problem is that What Chazal say Nimrod was behind it because it's in his place. It says earlier that he built a kingdom in the place where they built this tower. So in order to guarantee this forced equality, wherever it has existed in the history of mankind, there always had to be a powerful leader with a Kivshan HaEsh to frighten anyone. Call it the gulag if you want, dungeon. Call it the dungeon, mm-hmm. Call it the Kim's, what do they call it there? The re-education centers, and the You know, whatever, 1984, you recall. Okay, so the Kivshan Ha'esh was Nimrod's gulag, and the first two people to challenge that were Haran and Avraham. Mm-hmm. Only Avraham escaped alive, Haran did not. Okay, I'm just putting that in context because it says where this happened to him, in Ur Kasdim, Ur meaning, according to the Drash, the fire of Kasdim. Mm-hmm. All right? Vayikach Avraham v'Nachor lahem noshim. So Avraham and Nachor took wives. Shem Eshes Avram Sarai, v'shem Eshes Nachor Milka. And she was the daughter of Haran, who was the father of Milka, and the father of Yiska. Mm-hmm. Now, you know that Chazal say that Yiska and Sarai are actually the same, mm-hmm. right? Yiska in Aramaic means princess. Sarai in Hebrew means princess. So it's a worthwhile... the drash is not off, you know, it's possible. It's strange to mention her with two different names, so Chazal give the significance of these names, fair enough. But what it means is that Avraham, Nachor, and Haran were three brothers traveling. One of the brothers died, had two daughters, and as we will see later in this book, and also in Megillas Rus, and of course, as there is a mitzvah later in the Torah, levirate marriage, that says that under certain circumstances, a man dies, now he doesn't leave sons, doesn't leave children, but that the name of the dead person shall be carried on. I mentioned Boaz and I mentioned Yehuda and Tamar because those two stories, it's not done in the conventional sense of the Torah's levirate marriage, but those three, and I contend to you this story here, what they all have in common is that someone dies leaving a legacy unfulfilled, and family members, in the case of Boaz, it's a cousin. Boaz is not Mahlon's brother, he's Mahlon's cousin, right? Yehuda is certainly not Aaron Onan's brother, he's Aaron Onan's father. He's preventing Aaron Onan's brother from marrying Tamar because apparently he thinks that she's killing my sons, right? So she sees that he's not he's older. He said, "Wait till you get older," and she's not, and he's not doing anything. So she wants to get back into the family somehow, or I mean, have a life for myself, right? So there, it's sort of the, and of course, the Mida connected Mida. Two boys are lost, and two boys are, and there's twins. It would be nice if, you know, because Naomi also lost two boys, but Ruth is, I don't know, maybe. She doesn't give birth to twins, but it's only Machlon that we're concerned with, obviously. We're not concerned with Chilio. Okay, but so we see here that what's happening is as follows. Lot dies and leaves two daughters. One is named Milka, one is named Yiska. Nachor marries Milka. Haran dies. Mm-hmm. Without children. Haran dies with leaving two daughters. Nachor marries one of them, and Avraham marries the other one. Right? So we see that in this family has a very strong sense of continuity. We don't see this kind of levirate marriage in ancient Near Eastern law. Hmm. Right? I'd expect to find some of this in Akkadian or Ugaritic or some kind of law code. We don't find, you know, we find really very, very significant comparable laws on the books of some narratives in Bereishis, like a law of what happens if you're married 10 years to someone and they don't have children. Mm-hmm. What should you do? Give over your handmaid, let her bear children, and then you keep the child. And if there's a falling out between them, the mistress and the handmaiden, what should you do? Right? This is exactly Perek Ted Zion, right? But in our case, I don't have this. But so this is a something that this push for continuity is something that is we see in the family of Avram that makes him go back there to find a wife. Yitzchak.
Here's a question, though. You're saying that you're saying that Sarah is, according to this, is Abraham's niece.
Yes, she's quite so. That would make it good for him to call her my sister.
So that's,
because he calls Lot my brother.
Because he says in this past week, like,
she's my father's daughter.
Yeah, and not my mother's. But that would be incorrect.
No, it's perfectly said because so many examples in Tanakh, there's just too many, where we call a father a grandfather. Avram tells Mephibosheth, I'm giving you the house of your father, Shaul. No, his father was Yonatan. Right? And just too many examples. There's so many.
Okay.
So when Avram says, she's the daughter of my father, but not my mother, he means she is the daughter of my brother.
Yes. Or right? From the father's side.
So, yeah, that could be. There's no proof of one way or the other on that. It's interesting that levirate marriage in the Torah is only from the father. In other words, if I have two brothers who share a mother, but not a father, and one dies childless, the brother is not allowed to perform Yibam in such a case. Not that he doesn't have to, he's not allowed to. That's just how the Gemara in Yibam is presented. It's only the father. So Avram says that, you know, that why he felt he had to say that, I mean, the reader can see. He calls Lot my brother, and then it's fair to call Lot Sarah his sister. Now, and marriage to a niece was very common, even in Talmudic times. It's all over the world.
Which? I'm sorry.
Marriage to a niece. Uh-huh. If you have a much older brother, you marry his daughter. I would also like to use this to explain a very interesting thing in last week's parsha. Is that Lot also left Egypt wealthy, it says in the Pasuk. So Rashi says that Lot merited the wealth of the Egyptians because he did not inform Paro that Sarah and Avraham were not really husband and wife. They're not really brother and sister. They were actually husband and wife. As our statement, that's the end of the Rashi. This Rashi always gives me fits.
Yeah.
Why should someone be commended for not doing something that would be disgusting, despicable, and imagine Lot getting up there and saying, "Oh no, Paro, he's lying. He's really he would get Avraham killed."
He could have.
Okay, I understand, but why reward someone for not behaving like a shlub?
Because Hashem is.
So here, I think here is an interesting answer based on this mahalach, is that if Lot is watching Avraham come to all this kavod and wealth and honor in Egypt for being Sarah's brother, right? Don't you get it? I am Sarah's brother. So he's the husband. I'm the brother. I should get all that. So because he stepped back and said, "Okay, that'll get him in big trouble." So what? I am the brother. He's lying, taking away what should be given to me, right? You feel it? You hear it?
Right.
So once someone has, it's still disgusting and despicable, but at least there's a little more incentive on his part for which refraining from doing so deserves a modicum of schar. Okay, so let's continue. All right, so Shem Eishes Avram Sarai, Shem Eishes Nachor Milka, Bas Haron Avi Milka Babi Yiska. Okay, so very fact that it's very famous that you know Yehuda does not suggest to Onan to marry Er's widow in a vacuum. It must have been the practice. We don't have a Torah yet. We don't have the mitzvah of Yibum yet. It must be a practice. Now, but I just ask you just an interesting question: is that while the woman is waiting for Yibum to take place, right? She's a widow. She just lost her husband who had no children. Right? It's a week later, a month later, 3 months later, 6 months later.
3 months later.
To what extent? She can't marry. She can't do the Yibum until 3 months.
She can't marry.
Right?
She can't marry anybody else.
So during that time, what is her status? Is she engaged? Is she like a married woman? Is she,
yeah,
what, I mean,
she's
what I'm saying, the Torah has a very strict punishment for an engaged woman who commits adultery. Right? Engaged means she got a ring, her eight megadeshesly, but she didn't have the chuppah and shabbat brachas yet.
She's not engaged, right?
She's not engaged.
So what is she? What is this shomeres yibum? So
consecrated?
So the Gemara says it's called hikna lo min shamayim. She is engaged by a heavenly decree that took this poor man before he had children.
Right.
But it's a very weak halachic bond. If she were to commit adultery or marries someone else, mm-hmm. right? It's not considered adultery. It's not even a punishable offense. Right? I'm just saying. So the question is, so why does Yehuda want to have her killed? She says, take her out and burn her, the hypocrite. He's the one, it's his child. What's he doing? But still, not, even in the Torah, there's no death penalty. Even after Matan Torah, you wouldn't have such a death penalty. If a woman committed znus while waiting for her brother-in-law to decide which brother-in-law is going to do the yibum or the chalitza.
Because
or whatever.
The soul is waiting to come down.
All right, okay. So I would like to suggest to you that when Yehuda said, Hotzi'u havati saref, that it does not mean to burn her like a witch in Salem. Oh, that would be Hotzi'uha usrafuha. Hotzi'uha v'tisaref means
scarlet letter, maybe?
Yeah.
Is what?
Put on a nun for niuf on her arm. Niuf means adultery.
Like the scarlet A.
You just said that, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear.
Okay, so it means tisaref means burn something on her, burn a letter for adultery on her, right? So, because it's hard to imagine that Yehuda, knowing that he did something like this, I don't know if he did it with anyone else. Let's say he just did it with her, but right. So
but
when
he didn't know he did
when
with
he
her.
Okay, I understand.
What up?
No, look, when he sees her, that the all knowing narrator says he thought she was a zona. I can't help it.
She's
pregnant. A zona, right? But no, originally. But then when he went to his friend to get his stuff back, he said, where was that Kadesha that was at the Ayin?
Right.
He doesn't want to, because Zona has been taboo in every society, as much as politicians. Although it's sometimes the same thing. Yes, don't forget to vote tomorrow.
Gemara says that, 55,000 of the Kohanim of Kofni and Pinchas had affairs with the Kadesh of the Negev, and lightning only hit Shlumiel ben Zurishat.
Okay, so Yehuda, this is really where he rises to the occasion. Chazal tell us that he deserved Malchus, not because of stepping up to Yosef, but because of this. If he doesn't do this here, he's not becoming Malchus. So if he's going to say, Vatiyu of a Tisaref, Chas v'Shalom, he's going to kill a woman for doing this. No, he meant, burn a little nun on her arm, and that'll be a reminder of what she did. Okay, weiter. So it says, Vatiyi Sarai Akara, Ein Lavalad. Now, Bereishis is filled with trends and ironies and repetitions and learning lessons, right? We talked already about how Avraham deals with his wife's Akara, and now Yitzchak deals with his wife, right? And Yaakov seems to be quite a bit insensitive with Rachel. Why every single one? Why is all that? We talked last week about why everyone's having children at 70, 55, 60,
right,
62, and Noach at 500, right? So here, but what's this trend about everybody being a Kara? All three.
All three, why?
It would appear that a Kara is a barren,
incapable
of bearing children. It seems that not only three, all four.
Yeah,
it seems Leah was also barren because it says, Vayiftach et Rachmo, implying that she was also barren, and then Hashem gave her the little bit benefit because she was the snua, right? So
did she get pregnant on her wedding night?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It just sounds like they're saying she got pregnant.
Right away.
Medically, this happens when the family intermarriage the way they did.
The key is, John, I just wanted, it may be that these two midrashim are in conflict.
Yeah.
Not every midrash has to agree with every other midrash. Yes?
I heard they got a hard time about having children because Hashem wanted them to daven.
Yes, that's a Gemara. Gemara in the Sechah Shabbos says that Hashem loves the prayer of the righteous, that he tests them and sees how they'll react to their situation. Okay, all three? Okay. Now, an interesting additional trend is that you'll see as we go through the narratives of all Sefer Bereishis, is that Avraham and Yaakov share many commonalities, and Yitzchak stands out from both of them. You see many things common to Avraham and Yaakov, while Yitzchak stands out. We're going to analyze many of them as we go on week after week, but with all three, there are just some differences. The most sensitive of all three seems to be Yitzchak. The least sensitive of all three seems to be Yaakov. And Avraham needs to be pushed by Sarah. She also says, Chamasi Alecha, why are you letting her talk to me that way? So, okay, these are paradigms of virtue for us. We pray in their name every day, okay, Avraham, okay, Yitzchak, okay, Yaakov. But we also have to, they're human beings who had passions and conflicts and it's up to us to learn from those. Yes, Igor, you have a question.
Why think Enla Balak? Because that's not a kakara is enough.
I would just tell you, Sarah Kara in Valad is even, let's say, the two approaches to these kinds of things. Someone like Rashbam would say it is biblical parallel, it's a parallelistic structure, right? And I might even think to say, since this is the very first time the word appeared in the Torah, it's the Torah's way of telling me what it means.
Which word?
Akara.
Oh, Akara. Yeah. Barren.
Right. Never appeared before. Now, I'll conclude with this because it's an interesting parshanut message. I'm sorry, it's not, it's nice, but in a public setting. But in this week's parsha, the Torah describes. Torah describes Rivka as Besula Asher Lo Yida'a Ish. Right? So a close reader is going to wonder why do you have to. I know what Besula means. Right? So usually Rashbam, I'm sure you've gotten to know him well by now, Rashbam is the person who coined the term for biblical parallelism. No one knew what to call it before him. He calls it Kefel ha'inyan b'milim shonot. In other words, akara means the same as ein lavlad. So why say both? Hebrew Torah k'lashon b'nei adam. That's the way the Torah talks. We repeat things more than once. We say things and we say it two or three or four times sometimes, right? But that's called kefel ha'inyan b'milim shonot. B'sula ashalei da'ish. But even Rashbam feels that when we have that parallelistic structure, it must be because I either haven't heard the word before, I need the Torah to explain it. I'm sorry, the word Besula has appeared a few times already in the Torah by the time you meet Rivka. It's in this week's Parsha, right? So why does the Torah have to tell me in Parshas Chayesara what it means to be a Besula? Yes. Okay. So, Asher lo yida'a ish. So Rashi has a whole description, right? So Rashbam says, Asher lo yida'a ish means something very simple. It means she never even had a boyfriend. You get it? Because Asher lo yida'a ish, we know, Vayeda ha'adam eschava ishto, Vayeda elkana eschana ishto. We know what that means. We know. And it's an interesting mussar, because it means that love is not, should not be confused with infatuation. Love must be knowledgeable. You have to know the person. You know what I'm saying? The Rambam started his Mishnah Torah. What's the first book of the Mishnah Torah? It's Mada. The second book is Ahava. You get it?
First you know, then
court the person, know the person, get to know him.
This class would not be complete without an old puzzle. Brothers and sisters, I have none, but that man's father is my father's son.
I'm his mother.
You get it. No, mother?
Okay. No. All right, so...
He's
the
only one
who could get it. Okay, so... Right. So when it says Besula Shalayda Ish, so Rashbam goes beyond Rashi. Mm-hmm. Right? you know, Rashbam has a certain cheshbon of what she didn't do yet. But Rashbam goes further than him. In other words, you get the point? If someone like Rashbam is going to reject the biblical parallelistic structure, you're going to get even better than Rashi from him. All right? She never even went on a date. No one. She never even had a boyfriend.
She
right? No, Rashbam said she was 17, 18, 19, 20. She was much older. All right? Okay, so that's we'll close with that, and we have the word for love in this week's parasha. We have the word for love in next week's parasha too. But the real first time we have the word for love is Vayedah Adam es Chava Ishto.
Is what
Vayedah Adam es Chava Ishto is the first time we have.
Ah.
Okay, so that'll close us out now. But now we understand why Abraham felt. Even though God told me to reject this family, to leave this family, but when it comes to continuity and having children, care about family, and know where to come back, that I can go back to that family. I'll work on the idolatry part.